Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors. And anytime you're near,
hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm Deb Wolf, your host, and I've got a special treat for you today. If you go to Facebook, Camp Good Dog, where I often send you to look at pretty pictures of dogs, well, later today or tomorrow, I'll be posting some pictures of kittens for all you kitten lovers, and some live video of some kittens drinking milk from a bottle, which I'll have to dust you about a little bit later in the show. Today, we've got a stellar lineup. If you've got dog problems or cat problems, you should be calling the show. If they're medical problems or behavior problems, 888-627-6008. You can call and talk to Dusty Rainbolt, our cat expert. Yes, cats can be trained. And you can also call and ask about any medical problem your pets are having with Dr. Don Canfer. So 1-888-627-6008. Now's your chance to fix that problem for free. Just call us at Smart Animal Talk. So welcome to the show, Dusty and Don. Welcome, Dusty.
Well, thank you for having me again. I'm excited to be here. And as a matter of fact, I have a litter of bottle kittens. So it's a good time to talk about foster kittens.
Okay, we're going to get right to that. Let's introduce Dr. Don. Welcome to the show again, Dr. Don Canfer. Welcome back.
And thank you for having me.
So before we talk about how cute it is and we let people see these little tiny kittens drinking from milk, Dr. Don, do you want to tell the general public why they should not be taking kittens away from their mamas if they can avoid it?
Well, for the same reason we shouldn't take any animal away from their mama. The mama knows best. The mama cat's going to do the best job of nursing those kittens, licking them, caring for them, grooming them, socializing them, everything. Mama's milk is a complete diet for them, has everything they need, has all the antibodies in it that they need to protect them for the first few weeks of their life. And she'll feed them the right amount, the right formula. It's just the best thing for them is let mama do what she needs to do. Obviously, there's times when, you know, it's not possible. Animals get orphaned. Mama cats die. Sometimes they get mastitis, don't have any milk. For whatever reason, you know, sometimes we have to intervene if we're going to save these little guys.
You know, before we move on, and we'll talk to Dusty about her rescue kittens, because I'm sure that's the situation there. If they had the mom would be with the kittens. But at what age is it a good idea to remove the kittens from their mom and put them in families, human families? And at what age, is there any difference, doctor, and I'll ask Dusty right after, if the mama is a feral cat or if the mama is a tame cat, is there any difference in the age you would take the kittens away? Dr. Don, you first, please.
Okay, well, from a medical standpoint, there's really no difference what age you take the kittens away. If it's a feral cat or a domestic cat, it really doesn't matter from a health standpoint. Typically, you know, kittens are always considered weaned and, you know, ready to go on to their homes anywhere between 6 and 8 weeks of age. I think most people would tend to go closer to the 8 weeks. But you can successfully, you know, take them away from mom and send them to their new human homes at 6 weeks of age, and I've never seen any long-term problems from that. But as far as socializing them, that's a little different matter. You know, kittens, just like puppies, you ever watch them when they're, you know, the litters are playing together, that's how they learn their social interaction. It's how they learn to get along with others of their kind. You know, little puppies and things, they'll play fight, they'll bite and nip at each other. And when one animal gets a little bit too carried away and nips or bites or scratches too hard, the others will just simply break off the play period and walk away. And this is how they quickly learn what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. And it helps socialize them to others of their own species. And when you take a kitten or a puppy away at a very early age, they have nobody else to play with or socialize with except you or your family members or whatever other animals may be in the house. And so,
and you're just not the same, right? I mean, you're talking about some that the kittens you saw adopted early didn't have any noticeable problems, but I think you mean medical problems. Probably they were overly needy and clingy and would knead with their claws and would suck on things. I mean, there were probably behavioral issues, and that's where I want to bring in Dusty. Dusty, welcome to the discussion. So what's the best age for adopting kittens, Dusty? And Dusty's the author of Cat Wrangling Made Easy, other books too, but that's the one we're kind of hitting on today. What's the best age
for dummies as well?
Oh yes, of course, kittens for dummies. Not that you're a dummy, of course, anybody out there listening, but if you take a kitten away from a cat who could nurse and take care of it, that's not the brightest thing to do. So only do it if you have to. What age is okay, though, to take them away? And is there any difference behaviorally? If you have a mama cat that just doesn't like people, should you take them away earlier so they can be tamed, or no?
Okay, I'm really torn about this, and I have different answers. Cat breeders generally don't let kittens go before 10 weeks because mama has all these lessons to teach them. You know, the socialization and pulling their keeping their claws in when they're playing and no biting and all that. These are all things that we can teach them, but we can't teach them as well as mama cat does. And so by the age of 10 weeks, these kittens should know pretty much everything they need to know. They should be completely weaned. But on the other hand, kittens learn what to be afraid of between the age of 3 weeks and 6 weeks. This is a very, very, very critical period in their development, according to Nicholas Dodman, who runs the behavior clinic at Tufts. And if you have a mom that is afraid of people, they are teaching the kittens to be afraid of people. Now, I'm not saying that you necessarily take a feral kitten away from its mother, but what I am saying is that the mother can transfer the distrust of people to the kittens. So
you need to handle them then, right? You need to put them in a space where you can get at them. That's sort of the best solution. Still have them with their mom, but handle them tons so they don't learn that. That's tricky, though, right? If mom... In the situation I got a call saying, you know, she keeps moving her kittens. They're only a month old, but she keeps moving them farther and farther away. I've lost track of some of them. There's two she left on the last move. I can get them to you, and you can save them and make them house pets, or else they're going to go feral and live in the wild. That's what's going to happen. What do you want? And that was the position I was in. You know, it's a catch-22. I want them with their mother in a box in a closed room, but that's not a choice I was given. And, you know, what can you add to that, Dusty?
Well, you know, I get these calls all the time, and what I tell them is to, you know, they have to make the decision themselves because somebody still needs to raise the kittens. And if they are willing to bring the kittens into their house or they can find another foster home, then perhaps the best thing for the kittens long term, is to bring them in. And it's just a very difficult thing. A lot of it has to do with foster home space.
Well, and it's not as easy as it might sound. We only have 60 seconds left in this segment, so I'm just going to close here. We're going to come back right after the break and tell you why a little kitten this age is not so easy. It's not like an adult cat that you rescue from a shelter, which is something everybody should do. It's so much easier. Getting a kitten at this age, oh boy, talk about 4 a.m. feedings. I bet you Dusty's got some 4 a.m. feedings in her last week or two, like me, up in the middle of the night thinking, is there no one else that can be a mother to these kittens in Vancouver? Does it have to be me? Okay, so stay tuned. We'll be back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be talking with Dr. Dawn Kanfer and Dusty Rainbolt. Call us, 1-888-627-6008. You get free vet advice. Call us right now on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy, and I love you, and you know that I need you. Treat your furry best friend with a Clear Conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats, nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. Proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting and very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924.
And anytime you're near,
Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. It's me, Deb Wolf, and you can see those teeny tiny little 1-month-old kittens nursing from a little teeny tiny bottle in the little teeny tiny hands of my 9-year-old daughter. And oh, it's so ever so cute. But Dr. Dawn Canfer's probably just right now getting a little bit of the creeps thinking about the parasites and the worms and the fleas and the child and the animals. And yeah, that's all part of animal rescue. So Dusty, boy, do we have a lot of work ahead of us, don't we? It's more work than people think, isn't it?
It really is. I got these little guys when they were 2 days old. They still had umbilical cords. So, yeah, for a few days it was an all-night affair. But they get bigger and they don't need quite as much attention. And I'm happy to say that I just felt teeth for the first time today, so I'm real excited.
Oh, mine are 1 month old, 5 weeks old now, and they just chewed off the nipple on the bottle. They just completely broke it off today. They cut right through it. Is it time for them to stop being fed the milk at the end of their wet cat food now?
Oh, yeah. I think it's time to start referring them to or weaning them. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, they've been eating wet cat food for a week, but they've also wanted the milk still. So I was doing both because, you know, that's the softy I am, warming it up, shaking it up and giving it to them. And that's, you know, they need to eat little tiny bits. They need to eat often. They do have worms. They do have fleas. But I don't know, maybe Dr. Canfer, you can tell me something I can use. Everything I've bought says on the labels not to be used on kittens under 12 weeks. I'm hooped. I just keep giving them back. They're going to be water cats. Is there anything I can do about this?
They put that caution statement on just about everything. Some products, you know, of course, veterinarians are, you know, as a general rule, are very creative people, and we always take what's written on the instructions with a grain of salt. You know, most vets have tried a lot of these products on animals, you know, above and below the age group. One of the products I found that works very well on young cats, and I've never seen adverse reactions, is just the plain old Advantage 2. They do make a kitten size for, I think it's from 2 to 5 pounds, that you can use on them. I think it's labeled at 6 weeks, but we've used it on them a little bit younger. But another thing that's very safe for them is just any of your natural pyrethrin sprays, such as the Adams. Way to know it's safe, if it has a picture of a kitten on the label, you can use it. Very young cats under about 6 weeks of age, you don't want to spray it directly on them because they have a lot of alcohol in them. But what works good is spray the or soak a cotton ball with it, or spray it onto a cotton ball, and then just wipe the kitten down with a cotton ball that's wet with flea spray. And you want to always remember, start on the forehead and then go down. So as the fleas run up onto their head, they'll get killed. Very, very young kittens that are nursing, like 1, 2, 3 weeks old, you can spray the flea spray into a rag or an old washcloth and just lightly wrap the kitten in it with their face sticking out for a few seconds, and that will kill the fleas on them as well. And it's safe.
Well, those are good suggestions. You know, I just want to say the caution here. You didn't touch on this, but just in case anybody's listening, I just want people to know this, because disasters happen with this mistake. The products that are sold to apply to dogs to get rid of fleas, some of them will kill your cat. So don't think, oh, it's okay, it has a picture of the puppy, I can use it on my kitten. They even say right on them, do not use on cats. But it's in teeny tiny writing. So really, really be careful, people. Dusty, have you got anything to add to this whole worm, flea, baby, kitten situation? Any advice for people?
Everything I was going to suggest, our fine doctor here just mentioned. So I think he's got it there. I love what you said about putting the solution on the face first, because what will happen is the fleas will run into the ears to protect themselves. So yeah, if you can swab that area down, that's just brilliant, and I'm glad you recommended it.
Yeah, and
so my solution isn't working at all. I'm giving the cat a bath and the soap and the water and the suds and everything. They're just running into their ears and waiting till I'm done and then coming back. Is that what you're saying? Because I'm not going to dunk their whole head underwater. I'm not going to do that.
They're not going to get that many fleas in their ears to repopulate your thing. But no, they're coming back from the environment. If you see fleas on your cat, that means you've got a pretty significant buildup of them in your environment. And understand that the developing stages of the flea, the larva and the pupas, these things are microscopic. Most people can't see them with the naked eye. And I hear this all the time from my clients. Oh, we have tiled floors. Well, even in a tile floor, there's cracks in the grout that to a flea larva look like the Grand Canyon. So there is plenty of hiding places for them. You can't rely on seeing fleas to know that they're in the environment. Down here in Florida, we just assume that they're here. They're here 365 days a year, outside, inside. Whether you have one pet or 20, you do have fleas around. They're just here. It's the price we pay for not.
It's funny. There's stigma about it, though. People would rather have some terribly costly illness than have you tell them it's fleas.
Yeah, they equate it with dirtiness, or them not doing something right, or they think their home is dirty because they have fleas. And I tell people, no, it's just the price you pay for not shoveling snow. But you
even in the colder climates, you can get them indoors and they do stay. And it seems like they're so pesticide resistant. I wasn't going to talk about this today, but it's a big topic lately. It seems like the flea products we use and rely on, especially the liquids for the back of the neck, are hurting the bee populations. And there's a huge debate about this right now. Has either of you considered this issue?
Strange you should mention that. We actually had a beekeeper came and spoke to my Rotary Club 2 days ago and asked him about that. And what they're calling this colony collapse disorder, which is just basically the bees dying off and disappearing, it's a very complex issue. They have implicated several of the chemicals, the fipronil, which is the active ingredient in Frontline and all of the generic imitations, and the imidacloprid, which is the active ingredient in Advantage and I don't believe there's any knockoff Advantage products yet. It's not so much from what we're using on the cats and the dogs for fleas. It's the agricultural use of this. Farmers buy this stuff in 55-gallon drums, and they spray it on their crops to kill plant pests. And that's where the bees are coming in contact with it, not what you and I put on our pets.
Well, I'm glad you cleared that up, because I've been starting to feel really guilty about it all. And, that makes sense to me. It's the golf courses that are causing red tide, not the tiny little usages we have in our homes, because it's golf courses and giant farming operations that are irrigated and flooding into the waterways and overly, using chemicals. So that makes a lot of sense. We only have a couple of minutes. We're still talking about kittens and worms and fleas and all the things that go with little tiny kittens. I'm hoping, I want to tell you about something that happened in the news. A cat fell in Vancouver from a 14-story building, 8-month-old Savannah cat. They found it a day later without a scratch, not one mark, nothing wrong with it at all. Now, somebody else I know called in when I was talking about this on the radio and said they had a cat named Ingram who fell from 5 stories and actually hit his head, had a big scratch on its head, and was never the same cat after. So I want to ask you two, when we get back from the break, is this a myth that cats write themselves? I've seen footage. It sure looks like they can. So how come some cats go splat and some cats land okay when the unthinkable happens on a balcony? We'll be back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. During the Olympics, there was a break and enter where a cat was thrown off a balcony, and that cat had thousands of dollars of surgery required. It landed on a nearby roof, and it broke legs and arms and face, and it was terrible. It was a big fundraiser to try and, you know, pay for all the surgeries the cat needed. And then there's this one, 14 stories, 8-month-old Savannah kitten just leaps off the balcony. And, you know, it's like those things where when any dog bites, the people always say to me, oh, but it never happened before. There's always a first time. Yeah, it leapt off the balcony, never happened before, but now that it knows it can do it, it will happen again. So how come, Dusty and Dr. Kampfer, how come sometimes they're okay and sometimes they're not? I guess we'll start with you, Dr. Kampfer.
Okay. Well, there's probably a lot of variables there, too. Years ago when I worked at the Animal Medical Center in New York City, we used to see a lot of these cats. They call them in the big cities, they call them high-rise cats because they typically fall from, you know, high-rise buildings. Strangely enough, those that fall from the highest heights fare better than the ones that fall from lower heights. And I guess the theory is that they have more time to right themselves and to create air resistance and slow themselves down. And the injuries are always basically the same. You know, it's a split mandibular symphysis, you know, concussion, sometimes a ruptured diaphragm. If they land on all fours, the head being the heaviest part of the body, they can't slow. Their 4 feet act as shock absorbers and will slow most of the body down. And of course, they will fold at the joints and protect them. It's rare that they'll get fractures in their legs. But the compression on their abdomen sometimes will cause the diaphragm to rupture. And they can't slow their head down fast enough. And their jaws will always hit the pavement and they'll get a fractured jaw. And a concussion, of course, as well, because your head, the brain vibrates inside the skull, whether it has a direct impact or not. But those that fall from a lower height, like 1, 2, or 3 stories, generally do worse than those that fall from, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 stories.
Now that's interesting, and that's what I've heard, that it takes between 7 and 10 stories for that's when the cat actually gets into the right position. So if it's not a far enough fall, they can't do it.
And what they land on or what they may hit or glance off of,
that's true,
probably determines a lot of the injuries they get.
Dusty, do you want to weigh in on this one?
Well, once again, he has said he said it all. We've had foster kittens that we think have fallen off of apartment balconies. And in our area, the balconies are, you know, 2, 3, 4 stories, generally not that high. And they've suffered significant injuries to their legs. So, lower seems to be not so
worse.
Good.
And probably more likely to make a jump, too. I mean, the cat will just get stimulated by a bird or something and forget where it is.
So even if you live, you know, on your second or third story, you know, cats can still jump, they can still get hurt. So, and if they do, then it's going to cost you a lot of money, because this particular kitty, Olivia, we had to have the leg rebuilt, and that was thousands.
Bionic kitty.
Yeah,
the pin.
She got a good home, but it's just better to keep them inside. Or if you put them on a porch, make sure you have some kind of screen, and also make sure that your window screens are secure. And if you have kids, you want to make sure the same thing for the children too.
You know, last time we were on, you talked about a cycle, a little bit of a routine, and one of our listeners sent an email asking me, they wanted to know, okay, you said, I believe you said, according to this email, you said cats play, eat, groom, sleep, right? Is that correct? Because that's what the listener thinks you said. Okay. But she wants to know, where does poop fit into that? Because her little kittens are not using the litter box, and she wants to know when she has to kind of micromanage that.
Well, I think a lot of cats generally, of course, as soon as I say cats do this, there's always going to be the cat that doesn't. But
right.
They generally eliminate after they've eaten.
Okay.
Do you agree, Doctor?
Some yes and no. The younger cats sometimes will. My cats, I don't know, they don't seem to do any of the above in any particular order. They eat all the time. They poop all the time. It doesn't seem to make any difference that I can tell.
Dr. Don, from previous contact with you, I know you're not exactly the cat whisperer. I know you've got a fat cat, even though you're supposed to be like an ambassador for feline slimness. So Dusty, she can help you with your problems. I actually have a very quirky problem, Dusty. I'm going to ask you about a personal cat of mine. It's a calico female, spayed, mm-hmm. been with me now over a decade. I'm not even sure exactly how long. And for 8 or 9 years, it hid under the bed. It barely let me touch it. It wouldn't let anyone go near it. It was just scaredy cat, crazy cat. In the last year, it decided it will let my kids dress it up, carry it around, hangs out with them. It will let me pet it. It started just certain places in the house, certain times. But we're at the point now where I can pet it and the kids can pet it. In the last 2 months, I guess, this cat started sleeping in the bathroom sink. And in the last 2 weeks, more alarming, it started to sleep on the open toilet seat on the side of the seat. But like every night, like you go in there, if you sit down, you hear, because the cat's there. You know, what is going on with this cat?
You know what? We've had feral cats that we couldn't touch for years and years. And I think at some point they just... realize, oh, these people are not going to eat me. As far as the behavior, where had he eaten or where had he slept before?
Always top of a closet, like a very secure, high, hidden place, or under the bed. More often under the bed. Under the bed was the big one. Never in the bathroom, though. But just like she's in the sink and you turn on the faucet and, you know, like you don't expect her to be there, right? But she's always in the sink or on the toilet now if she's not out on the back deck enjoying the day, like if it's nighttime. And it's just, it's very odd, you know. And I was wondering if she's going a little cuckoo with old age, maybe.
Well, that's a question for the vet. But behaviorally,
okay.
You know, maybe she wants, cats prefer to be off the floor. And there are a lot of cats that like to sleep in sinks. So, you know, I wouldn't be that alarmed, but I would look into the fact that she has had a change in behavior, and that really might require a vet visit.
Now, why would she why would cats like the sink? I mean, I understand dogs like the bathtub during a thunderstorm, and we think that's because the tub in the bathroom is more grounded, so it has to do with electricity. But why would a cat like a sink? I mean, it's usually wet. This doesn't make sense to me. Dr. Camper,
well,
can you wait on this?
I'm listening
shape,
to this.
Yeah.
Fascinating, because my fat cat, about 3 or 4 months ago, started doing the same thing. She's about 8 years old, maybe a little more than that, probably about nine years old now. Yeah, I went in the bathroom one day, and the sink is all filthy. And I'm going, what the heck? Because it's a guest bathroom, and I live here by myself. No one's been using it. And I see all the typical, you know, the footprints, you know, the cat-shaped dirty footprints in there. And then I've actually caught her in there, so now I have to keep the door closed. Why? After 9 years, the cat decided she wants to sleep in the sink? I have no idea.
She's friends with my cat.
For a cat.
I think they just like things that envelop them. That's why they like to sleep in baskets or boxes. I think they just like to be surrounded. They like to think small areas where something cushions them and surrounds them. Perhaps it makes them feel safe and secure while they're sleeping.
Well, and also in a sink, you're going to have most of the sides enclosed. You've got the back, so nothing can sneak up on you in the back. And so, and you can see you've got these escape routes as well. So, it makes perfect sense, and you're kind of hidden beneath the surface. So it's
okay.
Like
I'll give you the sink. I'll give you the sink, but the toilet seat with the toilet lid open, squishing herself onto this narrow ledge. I mean, that's like me falling asleep on the edge of a skyscraper below a river, just above a river. I don't get that one.
Cats like to do that. You ever notice if you're working on something, the most uncomfortable thing on your desk is what they're going to lay on top of.
I have a friend who has Turkish vans, and they have a two-story house, and one of the cats actually straddles the banister on the second floor. And it's, 2 inches, maybe 3 inches?
My cats do that too. They do that on all my fences, and they like to look condescendingly down on the dogs who, will carry on until they figure out that the cats aren't going to fall. Okay, everybody, stay tuned. We'll be back at Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. Helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat treated to help retain all the natural rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf, your host. And if you want to hear shows I've done with Dr. Canfer or with Dusty in the past, I have some of them logged on DeborahWolfOnline.com, so you can check them out there. There's quite a lot of radio shows there, as well as cute pictures and all kinds of stuff. Lately this week, there was some great footage of a bear cub playing with a flag on a green, disrupting an entire golf course where three other bears were seen nearby, mama included. So all the golfers had to come up with an agreement to bypass that hole that day. And that was just great. It was dancing with the flag. It was so funny. It just looked obviously like it was trying to figure out why this piece of tree with the red fruit didn't taste any good. And it was just great footage. If you want to look that up, I'm sure you can find it. So recently, I've been made aware that there's a big street drug problem with something called K. And I don't know if K is ever used on cats. I know 20 years ago, 25 years ago, people used to look for kennels away from vet clinics, because the vet clinics that did dog boarding often gave the dogs this drug K, I believe it's called ketamine, to get them to sleep and not bark and be docile while they were caged and not exercised for days on end while their owners went on trips. So that's how I first encountered this years and years and years ago. Not every vet did this. Not every boarding facility did this, but some did, and it was well known. And so one of the things people wanted to be assured of when you were boarding dogs was that you weren't going to drug the dogs. It's supposed to be a terrible drug. It's supposed to cause all kinds of nightmares and hallucinations. And I'm wondering, Dr. Kanfer, is this something you're familiar with? I know I've talked with you about it in the past, but lately there's been kids ODing on it at concerts. There's security like never before at all the raves and festivals this summer. I actually went to a festival and was searched and my stuff searched as if I was a teenager. It was so funny because they're looking for this stuff because people are abusing it. So can you let us know, what is this K drug?
Okay, well, it's actually a very old drug. It's been around probably as long as you have. They call it Special K, or there's all different names for it. The drug is called ketamine, and it's one of the oldest animal anesthetics that we use. It's not so much a tranquilizer. You can't use it alone in dogs because it tends to cause convulsions. So I've never heard of anybody using it to tranquilize a dog. It also has to be given injectably, and it lasts only a couple hours. So it's not really suitable for tranquilizing animals. It's mostly used for anesthetic procedures. I use it every day of the week. We use it in a variety of species. We use it in cats. We use it in dogs. We use it in most of your primates. It's one of the few anesthetics that we use routinely in primates. We use it in big animals and horses when we anesthetize them. We use it in goats and cows and sheep, alpacas. I mean, it's used in virtually every animal species. And it's a very effective tranquilizer. Unfortunately, in humans, it tends to cause hallucinations, particularly during the phase when you wake up. It does have some human uses. It is used by some pediatric surgeons. Very young children tend to tolerate it okay, probably because their brains aren't developed enough to the point where they can have nightmares and hallucinations. So very young children tend to tolerate it well. It's also used in very, very tiny doses in a continuous IV drip for pain control for some instances. But
okay,
yeah.
So you figure it's the people using it at the concerts and festivals,
yeah.
It's for the hallucinations, right? It must be.
It has effects similar to PCP. It's what they call a dissociative anesthetic. In other words, it sort of dissociates your brain from your body. The expression I use it, the animals, they think they're orbiting Jupiter. It has no pain control by itself. You have to use it together with other drugs for pain control and muscle relaxation and some of the other effects that you need when you use it as an anesthetic. But yeah, people use it mainly for the hallucinogenic and spaced out feeling that it would cause.
As someone who uses it on animals and knows how it's supposed to be used and what its effects are, would you ever consider taking it or having a friend of yours take it for fun?
No, it's not. I mean, if you want to play with recreational drugs, there's much better ones to use and safer.
Because it seems to be the one of choice. This is becoming a huge problem.
It was here in the States. I mean, you're up in Vancouver, I guess, in Canada. I know for several years ago it was in all the papers and news, and it seemed to have been, and it was like any other fad, it seemed to have disappeared because you almost never hear about it here anymore, or at least in our part of Florida.
Well, since we're covering the news, I'll just finish with one more thing from local news. There was a man seen on film footage in a very, very fancy condo apartment building, like one of the fanciest in town. Multi-millionaires live there, and every single apartment is more than a million. And this guy was walking his Doberman, and he went into the elevator where it has security camera. The elevator doors closed, and he just started to kick his own dog, kick and beat his dog. And the whole thing was caught on film. And this is one of those stories where I'm just, it's so shuddering. I mean, they showed it on the news and they warned you to look away. And it's just horrible to see this dog submit to this beating like it happens all the time. But thank God for the footage. This guy, he works for a huge company with a huge contract that's now been canceled. This guy is going to get his comeuppance big time. And I don't even want to mention him by name because I don't want to jeopardize anything that's about to happen to him, because a lot is about to happen to him. Most likely jail time, in addition to the ruin of his career and the loss of the right to own animals forever, which thank God. But so sometimes there's a bright light here. Both of you have dealt with animals that have been abused before, and I'm just wondering, while we're talking on this subject, is there anything you want to add to the subject, Dusty, on animal abuse and how it's dealt with in our society, maybe?
He was pet sitting, and I can't imagine being the friend of his who owned the dog who saw that footage. The man apologized, but how do you apologize for beating the crap out of somebody's pet? You know, the same type of people who do that kind of thing are also the same, according to the FBI, the violence perpetrated on animals, these people tend to do the same thing to people. So,
yeah, and you know, kids.
I have fostered an awful lot of abuse cases, and it's scary that police departments don't take it any more seriously than they do, or at least in my cases, they haven't been terribly upset about it. So I think they're starting to take it more seriously, and their police departments are becoming more educated. But it's concerning that they aren't picking up the slack and convicting these people or even seeking them out. So I'm glad this guy got busted.
Yeah, me too. And you know, it doesn't always happen, but when it does, yeah. There was a dog walker who did a terrible thing. And actually, we've only got a minute left in this segment, but we're coming back after that, and we'll talk to Dr. Camphor, because every veterinarian everywhere has seen abuse, has seen animals come in where you know there's something shady going on. This animal didn't get hit, hurt playing fetch, not this way. So we'll talk to Dr. Camphor about that. What do you do when someone brings in a pet and you know the pet's being abused? I mean, probably the person who brings it in isn't the one doing the abuse. Probably it's somebody else. How do you even deal with this? Stay tuned. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Hello! You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I just was able to get my son's attention, so he's going to go bring me one of those four-week-old kittens. So when it gets here, you can hear the sound of a four-week-old kitten, because they are very shrill and very demanding. Oh, there's two of them coming. Here they are. Here they are, everybody. Can you hear that?
We could do this in stereo, you know.
How would you like that at 4 a.m? Oh, they're not gearing up. I want them to really get going. There it is.
House.
Okay, take him away, honey. Okay, and off they go. So, Dr. Camphor, we're talking about a little bit of a tricky topic, and you pointed out to me on the break that it's so similar to this NFL player that was fired for beating his wife in an elevator. Yeah, it's very similar. And what Dusty's saying, a lot of the times these people abusing animals will abuse children and weaker people as well. So what do you do, Dr. Camphor, when you get that dog or cat that, I mean, how do you know, first of all, that somebody's doing this to the animal? This didn't happen playing frisbee, or someone didn't actually step on the chihuahua's foot. Like, how do you know? Do you know?
It's a tough call, because you know, unless you're there to see it in person or you've got video footage, it's a very hard thing to prove. I was actually hired by a local attorney to be a witness. He was trying to defend a client who had a little dog, and same thing. You know, the police had arrested this guy who was being charged with animal abuse. And, you know, the story he was telling didn't match with the injuries that the dog had, saying the dog ran into a piece of furniture, and then it was so crazed that it ran into the edge of the door, and then it ran into, I mean, you know, a dog that does not try to suicide itself. The dog is not intentionally running into doorposts and furniture. It sounded very fishy to me. Fortunately, I was never called. The case was mediated, and whatever became of the guy became of him, and I never did have to testify. But I told the attorney, I said, you know, I'll provide the expert testimony, but this is very difficult to defend, saying these injuries are consistent with something the dog could have done on his own. I think it was pretty obvious the guy beat the dog. But,
yeah,
you know, unless you can prove it, it's a very, very hard thing to do. If you suspect it, depending on the state or locality you live in, you know, several states would actually require veterinarians to report suspected cases of abuse, just as you're required to, you know, report cases of child abuse. Some states.
Oh, I wish that were more universal.
And some don't. Yeah. But if, you know, personally, if I would have an occasion to suspect it, I will call animal control. Or the local animal control, and I will just tell them as much as I know and let them do the investigation.
The only problem with that is it might act as a deterrent. You know, at least if you think the vet might tell the authorities, you might not take the animal in for care. But on the other hand, maybe you would, knowing that the authorities would be called and it wouldn't be by your hand, because the person bringing the dog or cat in probably isn't the one who did the beating, I would guess. But that's just terrible.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about this. This is terrible, Dusty. Let's get back on the topic of cats and kittens. You've got this book, Kittens for Dummies, right? And the first thing people should do is not adopt too early. Just wait. Take the kitten home when it's already fully weaned. And then, because I'm having to teach these cats. I mean, I don't think people realize. When they first came here, they really couldn't poop without me rubbing their tummies. They really couldn't do much of anything, you know, and every couple of hours they needed to be fed drops of a milk solution that had to be warmed up,
and it's very expensive.
It is. Oh my gosh, it's like $50 for a jug of this powder that we're almost finished, you know. It's but the time, and then of course, because then they are able to poop, but they don't know to use litter. That's another thing that's probably not known by people. The kittens don't have control. They're not able to hit the litter box till about now. Now they hit it yesterday night for the first time. Well, before that, every day is a bath and a complete and total cleaning of everything. Yuck, right?
Well, and also at that age, you're talking about all the parasites, the fleas, and I can't imagine them having fleas and not having tapeworms. So if they have different parasites, yeah, that's also going to make the litter box a more difficult situation, because if you have an upset stomach or if you have diarrhea or whatever, you can't necessarily make it. So you know, that's another issue in the litter training. And, you know, kittens are amazing. Healthy kittens you can just put in the litter box, and it's so much fun to watch them, because if you put them in a nice, clean litter box, they just start digging, and they go, oh! And they are pre-programmed to use it, because they're programmed to bury their waste. And it's just amazing to see these teeny, tiny little creatures
already knowing.
And especially knowing that it's so much trouble to house train a puppy. Oh, my goodness.
Well, actually, you know what? If you start young and you use a crate and you're very diligent, it actually isn't. And I've had pups that I've sold within a couple of weeks that people are saying, oh, they're accident-free, and I have to caution them. Well, keep up the training. Keep them, you know, don't let them run around the house full, because she's not fully trained yet. She's still a baby. But I've had pups go from here and never have an accident in the house. But it does require a lot more direction than kittens. And now these little guys, yeah, they're hitting it every time since they got it night before last. They're hitting the litter box every time. So it is, they want to use it. That's not the problem. But they do need to be taught things. And lucky for me, I do have other cats here. So once they've hit that 6-week mark and can go to the vet and can get dewormed and the proper flea products and get their shots and get their all their health okays and The vet says the kittens can mix with the cats. Then they'll start learning from my cats. Up till now, the cats have seen them and gone by them, but there's been no contact and no contact with the poop or the food intentionally. Dr. Kanfer, at what age, providing the kittens are getting good health care, can I put them together without risking that I have to do the dewormer and the flea for five times what I would already,
And, right after you mentioned the fact that you've got these four-week-old kittens, they are very, very, very important. Kittens and puppies have to be dewormed at a very early age, more earlier than most people would realize. The current recommendation for dogs is between 2 and 3 weeks of age to get that first deworming. And for cats, it's between 3 and 4 weeks of age. Generally,
I can do it already. Is Strongin T the liquid okay?
Strongin or the generic Pyrantel is perfect. Fine for young puppies and kittens. It's very, very safe. We usually dose it at about 1 cc for every 5 pounds of body weight. That first deworming at about 3 weeks of age for both puppies and kittens is critical to breaking up the life cycle of the roundworms. Most puppies and kittens are born with roundworms in them. They get them from the mother inside the uterus. And if you miss or are late with that first 3 week deworming, you're basically screwed. There's nothing else you can do. That animal will grow up to have roundworms in it despite anything and everything it's done after that time. So there's an excellent website. Any of our listeners that might have a pen and pencil handy, you should note this down. It's called the CAPC. And it's called the Companion Animal Parasite Council. And it's made up of a series of parasitologists, expert parasitologists from various universities around the United States. And they come out periodically with the latest guidelines based on current research for deworming parasites. And their website is excellent. It lists virtually every parasite known to man, to animals.
Oh, Dr. Kanfer, we are running out of time. So I want to just let everybody know we've been talking to Dr. Don Kanfer and to Dusty Rainbolt. And I am running now to go get the Strongin out of the fridge and shake it up and give them each a dose. I think they're about 2 pounds. So I hope that's not too small, and they might be less.
And you should probably take it out of your fridge. We always tell people, take time, read the directions, store medications according to the label directions. Pyrantel should normally be stored at room temperature.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you for that correction. I will look on the label. I think it says refrigerate after opening. I'm pretty
possibly
sure it does.
It's on the formula you have.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it does. All right, everybody. So Dusty Rainbow, Cat Wrangling Made Easy and Kittens for Dummies and Ghost Cats. And Dusty, can I invite you, please, to pick up the latest issue of Time Magazine? And I want to set up a date with you, have you back on the radio so we can talk about it. There's a whole article on cats and dogs and how they think differently. And I don't know if it's true. I don't think so, Dusty. We need to talk about this. Okay, everybody. Yeah, right on, Dusty. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Don.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll have Dr. Don back, too. If you've got questions for him, send them in to smartanimaltalk.com or to All Paws Pet Talk Radio or to me, DeborahWolfOnline.com. We'll answer your questions. And until next week from Smart Animal Talk, be good to your animals.